My name, the easiest way to call me is Kossi. Surgery is really complicated to say, so I usually go by Kossi, which is the K. So I'm a graduate student at Purdue University, and I'm working on soil erosion with Dr. Shiwa Huang, who is here in the audience, and Dr. Jim Frankenberger, and the National Soil Erosion Research Laboratory team in West Lafayette, Indiana. There is Dr. Dennis Flanagan here too. So I'm focusing on the impact of seepage flow into the prediction of ephemeral gully. You can see in this picture here an ephemeral gully mainly caused by seepage erosion, but very little is known as far as the prediction of such phenomena is concerned. So what we're proposing is to quantify the magnitude of change into the soil strength when the subsurface condition changes. Our hypothesis being a soil under drainage condition will be stronger than the soil under seepage condition. And to use our findings to clarify the impact of subsurface flow into the ephemeral gully prediction. And then we will estimate impact of other parameters such as row direction, depth to restrictive layer within the soil, land covers, and such things into the prediction of ephemeral gully. And eventually develop a GIS-based ephemeral gully prediction model that will work in summer conditions as well as winter conditions and include climate data as well. So to quantify the change in erosion parameters when the subsurface condition changes, what we did is we conduct and two experiments. The first one aimed to find the change in erodibility when the subsurface condition changes. So it was done by collecting samples every 10 seconds during 3 minutes. And the second one aimed to find the change in critical shear stress when the subsurface condition changed. So we've done that by measuring the flow rate at soil detachment. So we found from our erodibility study that there's a change in erodibility when the subsurface condition changes. We found that a soil under seepage condition is almost 2 times more erodible than a soil under drainage conditions. So as you can see here on the in the slope, you have a higher slope, which is the erodibility term, in seepage condition compared to a drainage condition scenario. So the critical shear stress adjustment gave us a linear decreasing relationship between the critical shear stress in Pascal and the hydraulic gradient. The higher the gradient, the lower the critical shear stress. But in the range of the positive pressure, so +5 centimeters pressure and +10 centimeters pressure here, we found two approaches to understand what is going on within the soil. So there's the basic critical shear stress concept that is considering the soil as being weak when the water flows on top of it. So the high pore pressure within the soil just creates the high pore pressure within the soil creates the loss of strength and then the shear. And there's another approach that we're thinking about, which is the fluidized bed approach, where the pore pressure reduces the cohesion between particles, and the upward flow of water during the seepage overcomes the cohesion and the weight of the particles. So using that second approach, we calculate the friction within the soil using the Idelchik method, and but it is a method based on the Reynolds number concept. And we also calculate the mean pore pressure within the soil depth that we had. So we plot those two variables together and then found a decreasing relationship between the mean pore pressure and the cohesion within particles. This is what we expected. The higher the pore pressure, the lower the cohesion between particles. So, but we need some more data to have a better idea of how to interpret this type of relationship. So once we've understood what is the impact of subsurface conditions into soil detachment and erosion, we will include our findings into channel initiation models. The one we're interested in is this one, developed by Montgomery and Dietrich, which what is interesting about it is that it has two components, an overland flow component and a seepage component. What is very interesting is that in the overland flow component, there's the critical shear stress used to find the specific catchment needed to create a channel. So once we've understood how a specific catchment, for instance, can be changed just by changing the subsurface conditions, we will come to we will improve existing ephemeral gully prediction models. The one we are working on, first of all models in ephemeral gully predictions today are based on a slope and drainage area relationship, basically an inverse relationship between the critical slope and the drainage area. So the one we are interested in, the one we are testing now, is developed in central Belgium by Vendel et al. But as like all models for ephemeral gully predictions, it doesn't include any terms subsurface contribution term. So we'll work on that one. Right now, what we're doing is we're testing that model, that Vendel et al. Model, in the northern Indiana conditions to predict summer gullies by using GIS to test this slope and drainage area relationship. And we're using a precise DEM produced by digital photogrammetry technique. This will also help us acquire data in terms of length, width, and depth of erosional features. So I'm going to show you in the next few slides some tests we've run into Tippecanoe County. You can see in these pictures, for instance, a gully in the field, in the agricultural field, actually. This is a ground picture and an aerial picture taken with a remote control airplane. We run the Vendel et al. Model, the critical slope related to the drainage area. And in the left lower picture here, this is the gully we're trying, the main gully that we, oh, sorry about that. This is the main gully we're trying to predict the path of. So the red dots that you see here, this scatter of red dots, is actually the prediction we produce by using this model. So based on the overland flow, we were able to estimate some ephemeral gully initiation points. But I put these two pictures together to show the benefit of using our technology, the photogrammetry technique, because by using the regular DEM produced by the state of Indiana, there's a lot of noise. We were not able to predict that gully. These blue strips that you see here are the prediction made by using this DEM. So my next steps will be to investigate more the pore pressure impact on the soil detachment, and to validate my findings in laboratory by running experiments on a bigger box, which is a 5 by 1.2 meter box, and to relate my findings more closely to ephemeral gully. I'll also include data such as road direction, land cover in the ephemeral gully prediction, include climate data, run simulation, and use eventually the digital photogrammetry technique to estimate some soil losses. So if you have any questions, I'll be pleased to answer them.
noticed in that one of the last slides where you had the prediction of the where that ephemeral belly goes, it almost looks like there would be another possible path just to the upstream of that kind of a light path that's going
right here, right?
Yeah. And it looks like it's from one time to the next year, some kind of thing deflects it from that direction versus where you've got to go. I can see why you might have some noise because of that, because it looks like there's at least two possible footprints.
Yeah, from this picture, there's definitely two main flow paths. The one we were trying to predict is the highlighted one.
Right.
But the by running the model, we were able to predict a path that follows more the upper one,
yeah,
rather than the lower one.
Right.
But that is probably some a little bit of noise in the DEM created by our technique too, and also some kind of errors due to the fact that this model doesn't work at 100%. We will not predict a point at 100% precision. So
that's the problem, I think, in some of us trying to predict these things, is because from one year to the next, if this field is being actively tilled,
mm-hmm,
a wheel track, some kind of a furrow mechanism is going to result that's going to tend to make these
shifted or right. It's not a very steep area. I think it's gonna be something around 5%. I don't have the slope of the whole field, the main slope, but I think it's gonna be turning around less than 5%, 5 to 7% slope of the whole field itself. Now the slope here, what happened? Here we're taking the slope of each 10 centimeter squared. Like the resolution here is 10 centimeters produced by the DEM. So it says a slope at each point in the raster. It's not the slope of the whole field taken in general. We're taking a very accurate slope measurement at every 10 centimeters.
I think just one more in the back here.
I think the 1.5 meter DEM LiDAR generated.
I'm not sure is a 1.5 meter resolution provided by the state of Indiana on the
probably is a fair amount of interest in a lot of effort in acquiring this data. There are aircraft flights that develop.
To make accurate prediction, I will personally go with the digital photogrammetry technique at a middle scale level, maybe not a very big scale.
I don't think you mentioned how you calculate the area.
For the drainage, the flow accumulation, I use the default one provided by ArcGIS. This is I just use those algorithms that they use in ArcGIS based on the flow direction and the slope and those things to tell how many pixels in the neighboring are draining to a specific point, and then based on that you calculate the drainage area.
So, but I mean, what I see, you mentioned flow, flow direction, right?
No, I didn't use
You mentioned it, it's something you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly.